Welcome back to the third hour of Issues Etc. Time flies. I walked out into the reception area and there was no one there, and I thought to myself, where did everybody go? And I realized it's after 5 o'clock. They went home. Probably on your way home. Well, we will seek to inform in the next 25 minutes. Dr. Uwe Simonetto joins us here in Studio A. We're going to continue our series on vocation of the media. What went wrong in that some obscure Danish newspaper can publish a cartoon allegedly derogatory toward the Prophet Muhammad of Islam, and the next thing you know, embassies are burning in Lebanon, and there are protests across Western Europe by Islamists. And all of this happening while, at least in the Islamic world, Islamists are winning elections. They are politically stronger than they've ever been before. What role did the media play, and what went wrong? We're going to talk about that with Dr. Uwe Simonetto. He's an international journalist, a regular guest here on the program, director of the New Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation, and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism for Concordia University in Bronxville, New York. Uwe, welcome back.
Good evening. How are you?
All right. Speak to the issue of how the media dealt with this, and then we'll come back to some of the other issues. But how is it, what did the media play a role in fomenting what is now riots, mob behavior in the Islamic world over a cartoon?
Well, of course they did. And it's in a childish, self-serving way, the media published this stuff. I mean, they're doing this the whole time to Christians and to Christianity, and the Christians react more kindly than these radical Muslims do. But, you know, the media saw this thing. It looked funny to some editors. They thought, well, once again, we can scandalize the people. And so they showed Muhammad with a bomb in his turban. In a sense, one can empathize. But considering the explosive nature of the global situation, we are in a clash of cultures. We're in the middle of this war. Samuel Huntington was ridiculed when he warned of that, but of course we're right in the midst of it, and of course the media ridiculed it themselves. So then, of course, instead of just calming things somewhat, knowing that these radical Muslims will seek any excuse to hop around like whirling dervishes, burning things and behaving like absolute nincompoops, which is precisely what they're doing right now. They knew they would do that. No, they had to reprint it. They had to reprint it in Le Figaro in Paris, and then in Norway and in New Zealand. And at one point, bless him, the editor-in-chief of a Jordanian newspaper tried to do the same thing. He got fired. So, yes, in a sense, I don't believe that the Muslims or anybody else, including the State Department, have the right to censor the media and to censor this rather klutzy Nordic humor that the Danes displayed there. On the other hand, this is no time to play silly games, because it is far too dangerous. Lives are at stake here, lives are at risk, and already it seems at least two people have been killed in Afghanistan, where they're also whirling about like mad about something that's happened in a one-horse town in cold Denmark. So I think the media have to show more responsibility.
Now, one of the things that struck me as odd was, especially in Western Europe, those Islamists who are protesting what's happened in what's being printed in the newspaper, yeah, are calling for the shutdown of the newspapers that are printing it, at the same time availing themselves completely in the streets of the right to the freedom of speech in those countries.
Yes.
That's a bit ironic.
Oh, my, the amount of hypocrisy is mind-boggling, and I just hope to God that this is not typical of Islam. One sometimes has the sense it is, though. The same people who crucify Christians in Sudan, the same people who slit the throats of innocent people they capture somewhere in Iraq or so, the same people take that liberty of expression of free speech and then want to impose on totally different cultures, which on which they're dependent in two different ways, namely A, because they get their dollars in euros, and B, because they're being financed, especially the Palestinians. They wouldn't be anywhere, they wouldn't have an administration worthwhile if they weren't financed primarily by the European Union. And these guys are taking advantage of it and presume to dictate law to the European governments, insisting that the European governments somehow suspend the right of free expression, which is part of their constitutions as much as it is part of the United States Constitution.
20 years ago, there was a book published by a critic of Islam, and I believe he was an Arab, if I'm not mistaken, Satanic Verses. He wrote under a nom de plume.
Salman Rushdie, yeah.
Yeah.
No, he was a Persian, yeah.
Okay. And at the time, I remember there were fatwas that were pronounced against him and the price put on his head, and he went into secret exile in Europe. And by and large, I mean, even though it made a lot of press, that's about all the farther it went for Rushdie. It seems as though things are much, much worse nowadays. It's not left to the imams to make their to pronounce their fatwas or call for or put a price on someone's head. Now, the Muslims in Europe and elsewhere in the Islamic world simply take to the streets and start destroying things.
Well, yes, the dam has broken. It's very clear that the dam has broken, very much as the dam has broken in the 1930s in Germany. The dam is broken, and things that would have been unthinkable have become thinkable, possible, and are even being excused, even by Western apologists for these people. The dam is broken. You can negotiate with Hamas. You can who are sending suicide bombers to slaughter Israeli civilians, women, children, anybody. The dam is broken against any taboo against the beheading of innocents by people who presume to be the executioners of their faith. And I believe that we in the West are co-responsible for it because we keep apologizing for this type of stuff. We keep finding reasons. Yes, but you know, we also had, after all, we had the Inquisition. Yes, and we had the Crusades. You know, people forget the last Crusade ended in total failure more than 500 years ago. But, you know, we have the Crusades, so we must understand the Muslims. They're just acting like that. This is nonsense. We have to say no. And we even have to say no, I think, up to the point that anybody who engages in terrorism should not be allowed into a Western country. If they want to immigrate into our countries, then they have to follow the rules of our countries, period.
All of this happens, Uwe, as you well know, with, at least in terms of the winning of elections in the Islamic world, Islamist parties of varying degrees are meeting with really unprecedented success. They're winning elections. And the latest one that everybody, of course, has been talking about is Hamas in the Palestinian, I don't know if it's a government, but the Palestinian Authority there now has, one might argue, a more Islamist party in charge than it did with the old PLO.
Correct.
So how is it that there's political success, but more unrest than ever? What's going on? I mean, how do you diagnose this situation in the Islamic world?
Well, I think the two go hand in glove. You notice that, for example, the outrages that were committed in Damascus by Islamists could never have been committed without the incitement by the government, which is a totalitarian regime, ostensibly a secular regime. You notice that Hamas and the Palestinian rabble are basically one. And the others who are moderates, and there are many of those, and I know a number of those, have ever either emigrated, especially the Christians, or they keep their heads down, as did the decent Germans in the Nazi era. It's the same thing. So the rabble, you know, very interesting what Martin Luther said. Martin Luther discussed this question of the rabble rather extensively and said the rabble has no reason. And it is absolutely true. There is no reason there. And those who have reason, those people who have reason and who can think straight, stay underground. Others who think straight use, as did the Nazi leadership, use the rabble for their own purposes.
What role does oil play in all of this? There, it seems an ingredient that is volatile politically, economically, and one, by the way, which Western powers depend upon entirely.
Yeah, especially the United States more than anybody else. It is the primary reason anyway. And we simply have to admit, and the media unfortunately are not doing this yet, we simply have to admit that with every extra dollar we spend on gas from the Middle East, we are financing these clowns. It is very simple. And if we refuse to come up with alternative fuels, and I mean renewable fuels, and with a decent public transport system, if we find that this is not necessary, well, not doing ourselves a favor, and we're committing a crime against the next generations because they will have to suffer the consequences. These people have us by our short hairs because we cannot discipline ourselves sufficiently to produce alternatives, which do exist in the world. It's not so. I mean, if I look at this wonderful city here, St. Louis, where we sit, which had a fantastic streetcar or a trolley system until the 1950s, all ripped out. You have no public transportation system worth mentioning. You look at comparable cities in Europe, or you just look at Memphis, Tennessee, and you see that there are alternatives, which are magnificent, but if people don't take their finger out, then they have to do it now, and they have to do it rapidly. They can't fall asleep because the crisis is such that the whole world can be aflame if we don't make an effort.
Why, in your opinion, Uwe, when the president gave his State of the Union address last week, he mentioned those two elements separate from one another. Yeah. He talked about the war on terrorism extensively and made the case for various actions that are taking place on its front. And he talked about the need to reduce our dependence upon oil that he says is often imported from unstable regions of the world. Why not connect the dots and say to the American people in an honest way, like it or not, oil is a weapon in the war on terrorism used by both sides. And as long as we continue to buy it from unstable nations, nations that are hostile to us, we will continue, at least in that sense, to do a bit of a have to retreat. There. We are giving our enemies what they need, money.
I don't know why it is. It absolutely baffles me. It is, I won't go into this cliche, you know, because he himself has been involved with the oil industry. I don't think it's that. I think it is really because it seems that leaders nowadays do not have the courage that Churchill had when he told the British, point blank, that it's going to be a very painful thing that they have to do. If the president got in before the camera and said, "We have no choice. We must redirect our resources to public transportation. You have to give up those stupid cars of yours and get on buses and trains, and we will provide you with trains. But for that, we need funding." And if he described the alternatives to this, which are dire, then I'm quite sure Americans, being reasonable, would agree with that and would change their ways. But as long as it's, you know, I saw this on Sunday. I watched the Maury and Connie show.
Maury Povich and Connie Chung.
Yeah. Yes. And they were discussing this, and you know, they had some guy in from Harvard, and there was a nice little chat about alternative fuels, and and Connie said, "You, Maury, with your naughty little SUV and all that sort of thing, and yeah, we should really change our ways," and then one alternative fuel was discussed in a very lighthearted way, ethanol, and it would take God knows how many years until at least until 20% of all gas would contain and sold in this country would contain that. When in the rest of the world, from Brazil to Germany, there are alternative fuels and they're being used. And the first thing is, I mean, I'm driving a car here, which is a perfectly nice little car, but I drove up to Fort Wayne. The average gas mileage was 23 miles to the gallon. I have a car in France, a much more comfortable, much larger car, which runs on biodiesel. And the gas mileage I'm getting out there out of this machine is approximately 48 miles to the gallon, and that's a four-wheel driven Quattro Audi turbo diesel, which is as swift as the other thing. Why is it that you can't get this stuff? Why is it that the car industry doesn't do it? Why is it that the population here are not made aware of this? Why don't they even discuss this? I mean, biodiesel is like a dirty word when you talk to people about that. Oh, it doesn't work. And it's just one. I mean, hundreds of other possibilities, and in addition to which, I do believe we need public transportation. Why wasn't there a train for me from here, St. Louis, to Indianapolis and Fort Wayne, where I could sit, read a book, be comfortable, and not brave the sleet and the snow and all that sort of thing? Why isn't there anyone? Well, because a conscious decision was made against public transportation and in favor of the car, and now we're stuck with it. But a country that is as flexible and as bright as the or a nation as the United States surely can come up with alternative solutions, but the leadership has to get up and say, we have a problem here, the problem has to be solved, and you, dear Americans, have to solve it for us. And I'm quite sure they will listen to it. And I sound like a left-winger, and you know that I'm anything but a left-winger. It's just common sense we're talking about here.
We're talking with Dr. Uwe Simonetto, continuing our series on vocation in the media in light of the current riots in Islamic countries over the publication of a cartoon in a Danish newspaper allegedly depicting Mohammed as a terrorist. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. in about 10 minutes. Open lines with your answers to the question, would you vote for pro-choice Rudolph Giuliani for president in 2008? We'll have a little bit of audio to play for you, kind of introducing the idea, a short part of an interview between Chris Matthews and Rudy Giuliani, trying to explore whether or not he would be running in 2008. It's a possibility, so would you be voting for him? That's coming up in about 10 minutes here on Issues Etc. Twice already in our conversation, you have compared, and this is a comparison of some real gravity, you have compared the situation in Europe prior to the Second World War with the situation that we face now between West and Islamic countries. Do you think the two situations are of equal gravity? We can see, look, in retrospect, 2020 vision, that how foolish Chamberlain was to kind of try to appease and try to find alternate measures, and how late it was when Churchill finally said, we face the worst war that we're ever going to fight. Are they of equal gravity?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, they are equal gravity because you can develop a scenario, for which we don't have the time now in 10 minutes, but we can develop a scenario where you have an alliance of America's enemies, Islamists, plus the leftists down in northern South America, Chavez in Venezuela, etc., plus the Russians, who are not exactly our buddies, plus the Chinese, who have a different political system and are competing and will be more and more competing for the oil, that we can ultimately have the world in flame and a total dissolution of order. A democratic order. I don't even know whether a democracy can survive under the circumstances of global terror, unless our media, and that is, of course, my main peeve here, unless the media wake up and live up to their obligations to inform the public properly and not make light of foreign affairs in these things. I think the situation is exceedingly grave and will become graver and graver. But just look at how they ridiculed Huntington when he warned of precisely what is happening now. And still now, They say, well, no, that's, I mean, there are some idiots in Denmark who actually said, well, no, maybe we can pacify our Muslims here by building right in Copenhagen a nice mosque with plenty of minarets about. Well, thanks for sharing.
This term Islamist is one that I've noticed that's risen to the top. Yeah. And at first I was listening carefully, trying to figure out what the term is beyond just shorthand for what we would have called radical Islam or politically organized radical Islam. And that's the best definition I can come up with, politically organized radical Islam. Do you care for the term Islamist? Do you think it has some value? And how do you think it ought to be used, if so?
It has some value. It should be seen and should be explained as a totalitarian, and I mean totalitarian in the sense of communism and national socialism in Germany, totalitarian political system that is set to rise to world power. They want to conquer the world. They think they are called by God to conquer the world, by their God, not ours. And so therefore, yes, Islamist is a correct, thing. It's not Islamic because there are all sorts of varieties of Islamic, cultures, some of which are very benign and very pleasant. And I know those as well.
I want to ask about Saudi Arabia before we, wrap up our conversation. Right now, I think it's safe to say Saudi Arabia is a plutocratic society, I mean, ruled by rich ruling families that are not necessarily allies, but certainly not necessarily entirely hostile to Western aims. They understand the deal that's been struck on oil.
Yeah.
What if Saudi were to cease? What if that group of ruling families were overturned and there were true Islamists in charge?
Well, then we would have our knickers in a fierce twist, I tell you that, because then you would have then you would indeed have the scenario that I've just been describing. They could squeeze America together with Chavez in Venezuela, who is already establishing contact with Iran. It could end in disaster. That could bring down democracy and a free society in the United States as we know it.
Folks, when you surf the web tonight, read a great column written by our guest, Uwe Simonetto, titled, What? They All Read Danish? Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click links, and you'll find a direct link to Uwe Simonetto and the Concordia Seminary Institute on lay vocation, issuesetc.org. Uwe, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks.
Dr. Uwe Simonetto is an international journalist and director of the New Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism for Concordia University in Bronxville, New York. All right. The last half hour is a question and hopefully your answer to this question. It's about time we start thinking about those who will be running for president coming up here in 2 years. It's not too far off. 2008 is just a hair's breadth in the scale of history. So, given the fact that we have an incumbent in office who's reached the end of his terms, a vice president who has no intention or perhaps not even the health to run for a term as president, I mean, anything could happen. We're looking at an open field of Republican candidates. One of them, the biggest name being mentioned, is Rudolph Giuliani. Many people admire him. He is pro-choice. Would you be voting for him? We'll hear a bit of a Chris Matthews interview with Rudy right after this.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Many Christians today are reading the prophet Ezekiel in a rather odd way. They view this book as a roadmap for the end times, a chronology of what will happen when the nation of Israel is restored and the temple is rebuilt in Jerusalem. Is this what the prophet Ezekiel was really talking about? How can we find Christ in the book of Ezekiel? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for February is a commentary on Ezekiel, the first 20 chapters. It's authored by noted Old Testament scholar Dr. Horace Hummel. Order the Concordia commentary on Ezekiel by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. You can also browse before you buy. Just visit our website, issuesetc.org, and there on the homepage, you'll find the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, the Concordia Commentary on Ezekiel, chapters 1 through 20. The book is $42.99 plus shipping and handling.
Creation Message, banned from prison?
Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Bible Upholding Ministry of Answers in Genesis. Ken, I thought our prison ministry was doing well here at Answers in Genesis. Are you saying something different now?
Well, many prison chaplains do use our creation books and DVDs to witness to prison inmates. And we've received many great testimonies from prisoners whose lives were changed through this type of creation evangelism. But recently, we received a letter from a chaplain who rejected a creation book that was donated to his prison library by an AIG supporter. The chaplain wrote, quote, "I do not believe that the average inmate with an educational level below the national average can properly process Christian apologetics. I have observed that such issues as creationism, abortion, sex, and politics can be divisive in the prison setting. It is certainly divisive in our society, and we should not want to encourage any arguments that may lead to fighting or disruptive behavior." End of quote. Mark, it's so sad that this chaplain is denying the inmates the very message they need to hear. We know of many cases where prisoners have given up their disruptive behavior. You see, another prison chaplain who uses creation materials told us the majority of inmates who are convinced that God's word is true and become Christians don't return to prison once released.
This particular chaplain has prevented inmates from reading some life-changing material on the Bible's authority. Our booklets are available free on our website, answersradio.com.
Dr. Gene Edward Veith, culture editor for World Magazine, on the value of LCMS World Relief.
Well, you know, whenever I see news of a disaster or a terrorist attack or a natural calamity, I hear that just immediately they're on the front lines of this. And as a Lutheran, I feel so proud about that, not in a boastful way, but I feel happy that Lutherans care about the suffering of others, as our theology teaches us to, that we're to live out our faith in love and service to our neighbors.
LCMS World Relief provides Christ-centered, cross-focused care and concern. For more information, contact them at 314-996-1683 or look for the LCMS World Relief logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
AM 850 KFUO and Build-A-Bear Workshop teaming up to bring you a very special Valentine's Day. Be sure and register for your sweetheart. We'll be giving away 3 Build-A-Bear Workshop Valentine bears. Listen for the kiss. When we blow you a kiss, that's your cue to call and register for a Build-A-Bear Workshop teddy bear. We'll be awarding 3 Valentine teddy bears. Be listening for the drawings before Valentine's Day on AM 850 KFUO.
All right, you just heard our conversation with Dr. Uwe Simonetto, and if you didn't, it was a very stimulating conversation. He's always a great guest to have on the program. He will be our guest this coming Sunday night, and very rare treat. In fact, first time ever rare treat. You want to come and see the Sunday night program produced in real time from 10 to 11? You can do it, and Uwe will be our guest. We're going to be talking to him about Christianity and the news media. And we're going to be doing it at the Chapel of St. Timothy and Titus here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. Now, we're calling this a remote because we're actually leaving the studio to give you an opportunity to come over as a live in-studio audience and watch 2 hours of our program Sunday night from 10 to 11 here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, the Chapel of St. Timothy and Titus. When you drive in, you can't miss it. It's the big chapel-looking thing. And when you get there, go in the front door. We'll direct you where we'll be broadcasting. You can come and watch this live broadcast of the nationally syndicated Sunday night edition of Issues Etc. with Dr. Uwe Simonetto. Everybody who comes will get a travel mug, an Issues Etc. travel mug. Those have not been released yet. As far as I know, only Jeff and I drink from the travel mugs. Oh, Craig as well, drink from the travel mugs. Yet, you have an opportunity to get one for absolutely free. Come out and watch our Sunday night Issues Etc. edition at the campus of Concordia Seminary here in Clayton. We'll also give away some pins. We've got some pins. And so far, as I know, except for the ones that have made it to my house. Craig's writing with one right now, one of our Issues, Etc. pins. It's your chance to watch a nationally syndicated radio program in real time, live, this Sunday night from 10 to midnight at the Chapel of St. Timothy and Titus here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. All right, now coming off the issue of man-made disasters, the victims of the Islamic impulse worldwide are many and are likely to grow greater. And LCMS World Relief has experience with dealing with this very kind of issue in the Sudan, in Eastern Africa, where for many years Christians suffered at the hands of their northern Muslim neighbors. And then Muslims were suffering by being displaced and fleeing to the Darfur region in the western part of that country. LCMS World Relief was there and is there. You can find out more about their Christ-centered, cross-focused relief efforts there in the Sudan by going to our website, issuesetc.org, or you can help. Call them toll-free, 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438. Our website address again, issuesetc.org. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. for the next 25 minutes to round off today's show. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You know, we talk about these things off the air, and every once in a while an opportunity to bring a question like this comes before you as well. Right after the State of the Union address, Chris Matthews interviewed Rudolph Giuliani. Why? Well, to talk about a lot of things, including the State of the Union address, but in the end, the question that everyone is wondering about, Chris actually asked, and that is, are you running in 2008? Many people admire Rudolph Giuliani. He did amazing work as a public servant above and beyond the call of duty after September 11th in New York. He's probably one of the favorites for 2008 on the Republican Party ticket. He's pro-choice. So if he were to run in the primary, would you vote for him? That's question number one. I want your answer to that question, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If he were to win the nomination, and more likely than not, face another pro-choicer, Senator Hillary Clinton from New York, as a Democratic opponent in 2008, what do you do? Who do you vote for? Do you vote for him, or do you say, nope, can't do it because of the choice issue? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. We're coming to you live this Monday, the 6th of February. Here's that piece from the Chris Matthews Hardball interview with Rudolph Giuliani.
You know, I hear through the grapevine, Mr. Mayor, that you are drawing inordinate crowds out in the country, especially in the Southeast. You've been touring the country, going to big cities in the South, all around the South. And you're getting tremendous reaction from people. I heard you had like 7,000 at one event, 17,000 at the other. These are crowds the president can't even draw, probably, on a good day, that you went to the evangelicals. You're looking like, dare I say it, a candidate for president. Under the radar,
it's a lot
but
easier.
Definitely a candidate.
It's a lot easier to draw crowds and be popular when you're not in office, because you don't have to make decisions. I remember when I was mayor, every time you make a decision, half the people would disagree with you. When you're not in office, all of a sudden, you become a lot more popular. So
you know what I hear?
I understand.
I understand that people that can't even spell Giuliani know the name Rudy, and they like you, and you really have a shot at being the next president of the United States.
I always liked it better when I was running for mayor, when people started calling me Rudy, because I thought I had a chance they'd vote for me. So, and the movie Rudy came out the year that I got elected mayor. And every once in a while I watch it again on cable, and I say, thank goodness it came out at exactly the right time.
All right, that's the bit of an interview with Chris Matthews that Rudolph Giuliani did. The question, of course, there was, are you going to run? Let's assume, for the sake of argument, that he is. And let's assume that he runs in the Republican primary. He's got so much going for him. He's got name recognition. He draws the crowds, as Chris Matthews pointed out. He's obviously an able leader, an inspirational leader. He's pro-choice. Can a Republican candidate for president in 2008, namely Rudolph Giuliani, who is pro-choice, get your vote? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Is this the case where you look and you say, look, I'm simply going to have to thread the needle on this one. I know he's pro-choice. He hasn't had so much a voting record of pro-choice, but he's been pretty clear on the issue. And rather than have a pro-choice Democrat who is going to have a very definite view on the issues of Roe and regulation of abortion, I'll go with the pro-choicer I know, with Rudy. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And if you will permit me to extend the possibilities here, let's say he wins the nomination, as likely as not, I mean, looking out from 2 years, and he runs against another pro-choicer, as likely as not, Senator Hillary Clinton from New York. How are you going to vote? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, etc. Let's see what Larry has to say. He's first up, and he calls from his car. Larry, welcome.
Hi, Todd. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
I really enjoy your show. Mayor Giuliani ran against a pro-choice guy, or I'm sorry, a pro-life Republican, I would not vote for him. But if indeed he did end up running against a pro-choice Democrat, I think I would have to vote for him just because at least you have the hope that the Republican Party that he's a part of can influence him and possibly cause him to maybe ignore that issue.
Okay, so let me see if I get this straight here, Larry. If it's primary time and it's a wide field of candidates and there's someone else in that field of candidates on the Republican primary ticket who is pro-life, they'll get your vote over Rudolph Giuliani. But if Rudy wins the nomination and he's running against, say, Senator Hillary Clinton, both pro-choice, it's going to have to be Rudy.
Yes, absolutely. I think the pro-life, pro-choice question for me is trumps everything else.
Okay, what about this miracle scenario? Okay, this is highly unlikely, but let's just toss it out there and see what you say. What if by some miracle a pro-life Democrat won the nomination for president and then is facing a pro-choice Republican like Rudolph Giuliani? What do you do?
Well, I would seriously consider voting for the Democratic candidate. And, you know, there's other conservative values, I think, that would factor in there. But I would definitely, you know, I'd have to say just off the hip that I would vote for the Democrat probably.
Larry, thank you very much. It's nice to have a conversation with you here. And all these answers are going to be off the hip. I mean, you're right, because we're 2 years out. Everything is speculative. But I'm just wondering if it's very likely he would be running. So would you be voting for him? What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I talked with someone, oh, golly, it was some time back, and they said, look, there's just going to be a time sooner or later when we're going to have to choose between the lesser of two evils. You can't have pro-life Republicans on the ticket forever. It's sooner or later we're going to break with kind of the way things have been going in pro-life presidential tickets. And we're going to face a pro-choice presidential ticket. And we'll have to make up our minds, and Rudy might be it. Steve calls from his car. Steve, welcome.
Well, what a choice between Rudy and Clinton. That's kind of scary in itself. No, I'd have to say I don't think I could vote for Rudy Giuliani at all.
So what would you do? Let's skip the primary and talk about if he wins the nomination, the Republican nomination for president, gets the endorsement of his party. What do you do?
With both Democrat and Republican being pro-choice?
I mean, that's the most likely scenario there, yes.
I'd probably have to vote for one of the third-party options that were out there. I think what would need to happen in that case, if someone like Giuliani were elected, I think a very clear message would have to be sent to the Republican leadership that they cannot abandon this issue. And if they do turn on that issue, then all the evangelical Christians and all the pro-life people who they've been counting on for their votes are not going to put up with it.
Do you think they know that, Steve?
I think some of them. I think there are others who have really been skirting the edges of that issue the last 2 years. I mean, that's why they've been floating Rudy's name for 2 or 3 years, and there have been a few other pro-choice Republicans who they floated out there, and you know, Bush is campaigning for some pro-life, or I'm sorry, some pro-choice Republicans. That woman, Christy Todd Whitman, mm-hmm. The one that Specter in Pennsylvania, I believe he's pro-choice. So I think they'd like to get rid of the issues, if you want my honest opinion. And I know, you know, people in the party and have had some political involvement. I just think they'd like that. It's one of those issues they'd like to go away and not have to worry about.
Okay, real quickly, before I let you go here, Steve, the miracle scenario, if he actually faces a pro-life Democrat, Rudy against a pro-life Democrat.
I'd probably vote for the Democrat unless he was, you know, Genghis Khan or something like that.
All right, Steve. Steve, thank you. Yeah, Genghis Khan not likely to be running. Also not likely to be pro-life. But look, we have been talking to Democrats for Life, and they say, will there ever be a Democratic, pro-life Democratic presidential candidate? And they say, yes, sooner or later there will be. And many of them have said, if the Democrats were really smart in presidential elections, they'd take this issue. They'd take this issue. Wouldn't be the first time party flipped on a big issue like this, a big moral issue. Dave calls from his car. Dave, thanks for waiting. Welcome.
Hi, Todd. How are you today?
Doing well.
Okay, I would, on your first scenario, I would first, you know, in the primary, I would probably look for another candidate other than Giuliani.
Okay.
All right. But if it gets down to election time, and it would be the case of him against a Democratic, pro-choice person, I'd have to go with Giuliani for a couple of reasons. One, as long as the Republican platform does not take a pro-choice, stance, then it's probably not going to be a major issue as far as where Giuliani stands. Whereas if the Democratic platform remains pro-choice, I'd have to go, you know, Republican that way. And therefore, that seems to give us the option of Congress being hopefully maintaining the Republican balance that keeps the pro-choicer agenda off, then we have to go with with the Republican there.
Okay.
Secondly, as long as we have since with Bush and we've been able at least within our courts now, at least we have a chance with the Supreme Court to have a little better balance on this issue. I don't see it as probably won't be a major issue in the election itself.
Okay, Dave, thank you very much. Now, he raises the issue of the party platform, and that's a big issue too. Although it's kind of split when you ask people in the know, how important is the platform? Half of them say, oh, very important, philosophical basis for everything we do. And the other half say, it's symbolic. It doesn't mean anything. So, if the Republican platform were to remain solidly pro-life, then maybe Giuliani as a pro-choice president might not be such a bad idea. If you were talking about kind of balancing out that view, another caller talked about the other Republicans, pro-lifers governing, saying, look, kind of acting as a hedge for a pro-choice Republican president. I wonder if it were Rudy against a pro-life Democrat, but the Democratic Party's platform remained pro-choice. Platforms change a lot slower than politicians do. It's kind of the other side of the coin. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Taking your answers to the question, would you vote for pro-choice Rudy Giuliani if he were the candidate for president, the Republican candidate for president in 2008? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Tomorrow on the program, Food in Matthew's Gospel. Pastor Eric Rotman is going to join us, and Dr. Mark Mattis on the role of justification in contemporary theology. That's coming up tomorrow on Issues, Etc. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. We've got less than 10 minutes. Call now, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In Palm Bay, Florida, listening on the Internet. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Todd. You know, lesser of two evils, but since I don't live in New York, I can't really address the first question. But when it comes to if it were Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani, I'm afraid that the pro-choice, pro-life thing would just kind of fall by the wayside, and I would have to vote for who could actually do the job. And
so
I think
it would be a wash in terms of the life issue for you.
Yeah, I'm afraid so, because I believe that Rudy would be more qualified to actually be a president. And it's not because of Hillary's history or the fact that she hasn't done a good job as a senator or anything. It's just that Rudy has done as a track record of being in, you know, in troubled times, he's able to be able to pull things up and get things done. Which is kind of what we're looking, you know, we spent with Uwe there talking about how things are going to get bad.
What would you say to someone who says, look, I would just sit it out? I take it you wouldn't sit it out. So how would you argue for if someone says, look, if I'm given the choice between pro-choice Republican Rudolph Giuliani and pro-choice Democrat Hillary Clinton in 2008, I'm sitting out.
That's always a bad idea.
Why is that?
Well, if you quiz somebody like that on what they're going on, what they really desire for, you know, for their next 4 years, because that's what you're going to have to deal with is 4 years of one or the other, and you didn't make the choice, you didn't support one or the other, and you didn't work to get support for one or the other. So when you look at the other things that they're bringing to the table, it's far out, so we really don't know what they would be bringing to the table, but. Let's say that that Rudy is willing to support the, you know, whatever his party calls for pro-life, pro-choice. And Hillary would naturally be pro-choice. You know, who would you rather have in office if that's going to be your key issue? Now, of course, my key issue is that, you know, as time's going by here, we're watching the what appears to be like a schoolyard thing going on a global scale. Everybody's mad about some pictures. Well, the Muslims are mad about a bunch of pictures. Who do we want in charge?
That's a good question. What if real quickly, Matt, what if a pro-life third-party candidate like Pat Buchanan were in the mix there in 2008?
If he were in the mix, it would be, it'd be kind of funny.
Well, it'd be funny, that's for sure.
But. I've never been too impressed with Pat Buchanan. He's a great he's a great analyst, a great commentator. But for some reason, whenever I look at it, when I take like the problems that we've had over the 9/11 and all the different things, and I think about Pat Buchanan in that place, I get the same chills that I thought about when Scary Carrie was running.
All right, Matt, thank you. You know, I'm wondering about that because I'm be completely honest with you folks. If it were Rudolph Giuliani, Republican, Hillary Clinton, Democrat, Pat Buchanan, third party, and I think about the world we're living in today, God love him for being pro-life, Pat Buchanan. And I've been criticized for being a single issue voter, as I've said I am. But I might do it, but I would do it with some fair amount of trepidation, hoping we could find someone else real quick. That's just my opinion. That's just my opinion. Roger's up next. Call him from his car. Hi, Roger. All right, let's talk with Ann in Crestwood moving down the line. Ann, welcome.
Hello, Todd. I'm thinking of a different scenario. I'm thinking of Condi Rice maybe up against Hillary. But the thing is, I'm thinking that maybe Condoleezza Rice is a pro-choice.
She is pro-choice.
Is she?
Yeah, as far as I know. And, of course, she's having not been a lawmaker, of course, but kind of government servant, you kind of face the issue of how is she voted, and that's hard to say. But as far as anyone can tell in her viewpoints or publicly expressed viewpoints, she's pro-choice.
Well, and I know she has said she has no desire to run, at least not at this point, but I wouldn't be surprised if she did at some point. That would be very difficult, I think, and I think it would be down to the wire for me as to who I'd vote for, because I can't imagine that the Republican Party would give us someone who was pro-choice.
It's going to happen sooner or later. And
okay.
Would you vote for a third party?
It would depend on where they stand on things. And third party people are usually on the other side of the fence, as that is regarded, it seems like.
What do you mean?
I mean, I thought they're usually pro-choice people. The libertarians and such, they just don't usually favor our ideals in that area.
All right. I think with the libertarians, you'll find them all over the map on that issue.
Oh, okay.
And thank you very much. Constitutional Party, or the Constitution Party, pro-life. Very pro-life. But unelectable. See, that's the problem with third-party options. Beyond just the issue of, say, with someone like Pat Buchanan, could he govern well? Can he get elected? And politics being the art of the possible, you vote with the most possible person. To vote for someone who you know could not be elected, period. And therefore, your vote that would have gone for X or Y goes someplace else, and X or Y wins anyway, and you know they're going to win anyway. Seems like a self-defeating approach. One with which you can sleep at night, but one doesn't get a lot done. Tomorrow on the program, we'll continue our series on food in the Bible. Pastor Eric Rotman, quickly becoming one of my favorite guests. We'll be talking with him about that. We'll also continue our series on Eastern Orthodoxy with Dr. Gene Smith tomorrow on the program. And, oh my goodness, we already have it. Very rarely this early in the week do we have things lined up and organized and ready to go. The role of justification in contemporary theology with Dr. Mark Mattis tomorrow on Issues, Etc. I would like to think that the predominantly pro-life party, the Republican Party, it's not the exclusive pro-life party. Let's be very clear about that. I would like to think that they would always offer a pro-life candidate, a reasonable pro-life candidate. But that won't happen forever. Wouldn't it be something? Wouldn't it be something if the Democratic Party, wherein now the pro-life voice is squelched and so very feeble, there, but feeble, actually took this issue? I mean, we tend to think about it. It's sloppy thing, but we tend to think about pro-life Republican, pro-choice Democrat. That would change a lot of things. It really would. It would change a lot of votes. Why wouldn't they do this? I mean, if only for a political expediency. The issue isn't going away. We've got the better part of 2 years to think about it and to watch what's happening and to see the candidates emerge on the field and finally take their places against one another. And that's why we're talking about it today. And that's why we're striving here at Issues, Etc. to continue to be talk radio for the thinking Christian, thinking not only about what's happening today, but thinking ahead as well. Not simply reacting as things occur, but being proactive. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.